and I went ahead and put up the questions from last week with the answers so that we can just kind of go quickly through them and just get it down. Seven tribes that Moses had spoke of, that he warned them that they would be living in the land of Canaan. They were the what? The Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. What was the main group that they have to fight over and over again? The Amorites. Okay? And then which one of those names is the one that, well, I guess we'll get to that in just a minute. I guess I went ahead of myself. The tribes that were living in the land of Canaan were descendants of which son? Of Noah. Ham. Okay? And remember, Ham was the one who traveled to the land that we normally call Canaan, and then all the way down into Egypt and parts south. Shem was the one that was in the middle, the Arabian desert. And then the Jephthites or Jephthah's family. Remember, they jumped over the northern mountains and they settled way up north. And we don't hear much about them. Okay, what is the name that's used frequently to collectively refer to all seven tribes? The Canaanites. Okay, what tribe was considered the largest and the strongest in the land? That was the Amorites. And then what group of people established an early kingdom along the Halys River, which is up in that northern area of Asia Minor? The Hittites. And remember, the Hittites also had some people that were living down in the land of Canaan, because who bought something from one of the Hittites? Abraham bought a cave to bury his wife, yes, from a Hittite. Okay, the Israelites killed and took territory of what very, very large man?
Og.
Og. And I guess I could go down a little bit for us. Og. Remember, he had the bed that was 13 feet long and 6 feet wide, the ultimate king-size bed.
No sheets for that thing.
No sheets for what is the twin that they call, or they have the California King and stuff, and I don't know what you'd call this one because it was extra long. I don't know of any bed that's 13 feet long. It would not fit in most houses. I mean, if you think about it, most of our rooms are bedrooms, maybe 12 feet on the long side. Unless you're, you know, some houses are built a little bit different and have maybe a 14-foot room. Even a 14-foot room would give you 1 foot of squeeze around.
Maybe they could turn the living room into a bedroom.
Might have had to do that. Okay. Joshua sent spies across the Jordan to what city? Jericho. Okay. All right. Where was the camp of Israel that Israel used after they crossed the Jordan River? They kept coming back to this one place over and over again. Gilgal. Okay. What was the very first city in Canaan to fall to the Israelites? Remember, on the eastern side of the Jordan, they've already had several areas fall. Og and Shiloh and several places have already fallen on the eastern side, but what's the first one inside Canaan to fall?
Jericho.
Okay. Joshua sent spies toward Bethel, and when they returned, they reported that they could easily take what city?
Ai, we've got this.
Did they have it?
No.
Not hardly. Did they? How many people? This wasn't on there, but how many people did they take with them to fight the battle? About 3,000. And how many died?
36.
Okay. And the Israelites were defeated because there was sin in the camp. Who was stoned for that sin that brought on the defeat?
Achan and his family.
Achan and his family and his... all his belongings and his animals, everything. Everything. It just listed Achan. But that's not... He's the one that caused it, yes. But everybody suffered. And we talked about that last week. That sometimes our sins, and most of the time, our sins affect not just us. It affects the people that worry about us. It affects the people that we sin against. It affects the people that see the sin that we commit, possibly see it or hear about it, and then maybe they're encouraged to do the same thing, or they're concerned for our... heartache can affect you in many ways. At what Twin Peaks did Joshua read the law and the Israelites stake their claim to the territory? Remember the two peaks and Shechem's in the middle. Yeah. Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal. Okay, and men came from what city to deceive the Israelites into making a treaty of peace? Gibeon. Oh, we've come from a long way away. See our tattered, our moldy bread. We are so hungry. We want peace with you. Why did they want peace with them?
So they would be scared.
They were scared because they had already taken all these places on the eastern side of the Jordan River. They had taken Jericho, and we need to make peace. Were God's people supposed to make peace with any of the people living there? No. What were they supposed to do to the people living there? Drive them out, kill them, destroy them. That was to be gone. Okay. Adonai Zedek, a king that was upset over all those Israel's victories, and he was also upset that Gideon had made a treaty with them. He was from what city?
Jerusalem.
Okay. And Jerusalem was a fortified city, and he was scared. Okay, and remember, he enlisted the aid of a bunch of different kings from further south to see if they could go and take things. And what city did they attack?
The city that they
The Gideon. Yeah. And remember, Gideon sent word to God's people, Joshua and God's people, and they marched all night to come and thoroughly take over all those people and their cities, who attacked and defeated several different kings during his campaign to rid the land of the Canaanite people.
Joshua.
Okay. And one of the large cities in the land that Joshua and the Israelites conquered that was located in the north was
Hazor.
Remember, that was the last king or last group of king allies that they were going to have to fight because they had already thoroughly routed them all. Okay, so that brings us to lesson 17. And we will get to... It is lesson 17, right? Because we did 16.
What were you doing then?
That was there was extra questions that were... in lesson 16, there weren't any questions listed at the back of the book. So, or at the back of the lesson. So the CD that I think you had sent copies of the mm-hmm. full length questions was the questions that just had the teacher section, so it already had the answer
and if you don't
written down.
I can send that to you.
Okay. Yes. So we will start with chapter 17. We have got the people into the land of Israel or into the land of Canaan, which just really quickly, last week I started the plan of God, and I stopped right to the point that we got it. But let's go over the plan of God really quickly. Before the world began, God had a great plan. He started telling the plan to the first fathers, and He picked one first father named Abraham, and He told him three things. I'm going to make you a big family. I'm going to give you a special land to live in. And through your seed's going to be a great blessing on everybody. But there's a problem. At first, they weren't a big family. It was Abram and Sarah. No children. They were old. God took care of that. Then, they weren't in their special land. That was the next problem. They were slaves down in Egypt. For 400 years, they were down in Egypt. But they weren't in their special land. Now, it was providential that God had sent. It gave them time to grow. They've turned into a big nation down in Egypt. And then now God's going to take them back to the land, because they went down to the land. God sent Joseph ahead of them down into the land, not by a, you go down there and take care of business so that your family will be able to survive later on. It was through the his brothers sending him down there, selling him.
I think that's one of the stories in the Bible that's most meaningful to me about when you're going through hard times. You don't know where that's going to lead, what that's going to mean.
That's right. You do not know. That's absolutely right.
Joseph didn't know.
No. No. It seemed like bad news. He gets down there and he's sold as a slave. The person who buys him, his wife lies about him. He winds up in jail. The butler who he interpreted the dream for forgot about him for two more years, and then finally remembers him when the Pharaoh has a dream and brings him out. And then God uses him to interpret the dream and save them from the famine that was going to come. And not only save them, but by saving them and having all that food in Egypt, saved his family. And so then the family moves down there. Now they're not in their special land, though. They're slaves in Egypt. So God sends them a special hero named Moses to get them out of Egypt and down there through the wilderness of sin to get the law. And then they mess around and they don't go right into the land. And they have to wander around in the wilderness for 40 years, all their time. And then God sends them another hero named Joshua. Because Moses can't enter the land, he strikes the rock instead of speaking to the rock, and he takes credit for taking care of the water situation. And God punishes him by not letting him go into the promised land. So God sends him another hero, Joshua, to carry him into the land at the Battle of Jericho. And that's where we're at. And then they fight all the enemy nations, and they win the battle. And then Judges to help them, because they turn away from God. This generation arises that doesn't know God. And they turn away from God, and enemy nations rise up against them. Because remember what Moses had told them, that Jehovah had said, if you do these things, I'll bless you. If you don't do these things, I'll curse you. And you'll lose your land. So they're in this time period where they've turned away from God, and He's sending enemy nations to come up against them. And when, just like our kids do, and we do too. So I don't want to just do it on the kids. When you face major, major trouble in your life, what's the first thing you do? Hopefully. Turn to God. Pray. I can't count, and this is sad, but I can't count the number of times that someone has been unfaithful and unfaithful and unfaithful and unfaithful and unfaithful, but you let them have a diagnosis of something serious. They're there, and some of them promise, oh God, if you'll just get me through this, I will serve you, and then things get better. And they turn away again.
I think most of us are guilty of thinking of the goodness of God.
Yes.
And of course, He is good, totally good. But
yes.
We forget the severity of it.
Yes, ma'am. We do forget the severity of God. And not that God is punishing us on all these things and stuff, but God expects us to keep our vows. God expects us to, if we've said we're going to serve Him, just like He told Joshua to tell those people, don't say it if you don't mean it. You serve God. And because if you don't, He's going to turn from you and do you harm. And so we are in that time period of judges, and they turn away from God, they call for help, and God sends them a judge, and then there's peace. And then they turn away from God, and God sends an enemy nation against them, the Philistines a lot of times, and they turn to God, and God sends a judge, and there's peace. But then they get to the point where they don't want judges anymore. They want kings like everybody else. Give us a king. Like we can be like all the other nations. And God says, you don't want kings. These are the things that the kings are going to do, and you're not going to like it, and they're going to cause you to lose your land. Oh, no, no, we want kings anyway.
Everybody else has one. And
right, we want one too. Sometimes our younger generation especially, they don't want to be different from their friend, their religious friends. And so we find people trying to bring in new, and I'm not saying new songs are wrong or anything like that, but we sometimes find the younger generation trying to bring in things because they haven't been taught authority, authority, authority. And one congregation I heard about one time, the young people met up on a Saturday night, and they took all the pews and they unbolted them from the floor, and they angled them all to where on Sunday morning when they were singing, they'd be singing to each other instead of into somebody's back. Is it wrong to have the pews turned to face each other? No. Was it wrong the way they did it?
They just walked in without...
Nobody knew until Sunday morning. They walk in and everybody's like, what has happened?
Yeah.
You have people that, well, let's turn the lights off during the Lord's Supper and light a candle. Make it more meaningful. Can I point to a scripture and say, oh no, you cannot have the lights off during the Lord's Supper?
No.
No?
But you can't point to one that says you should.
You can't point to one that says you should. And sometimes if we're doing it just for the sake of doing something to be, I don't know.
Shocking.
Emotional. Or emotional. That's the emotional.
Well, we're supposed to do things decently.
Decently and in order.
I guarantee you that Sunday morning when everybody walked in, the pews were different.
It created a distraction. It does. And so there's things that we can't do things just to be like everybody else. But that's what they wanted. They wanted kings like everybody else. And they caused them to lose their land. Okay, so we had the divided kingdom, and then the northern kingdom falls. Israel falls, brought away, because they don't have any good kings. Immediately, Jeroboam sets up golden calves at Dan and Bethel. We don't need to go down to Jerusalem to worship. It's just too far. It's too hard on your families. You know, you hear things like that now. It's too hard to come to all the gospel meeting nights. It's just too hard on our kids. I'll be the first to admit, yes, it's hard on the kids. It's hard on the adults to go every night. But it's refreshing. If you have the right mindset, it's refreshing. It's a good tired.
I have learned for me that often the hardest part is from here to there. When I'm here, it's great.
Yeah, it's just the getting.
Physical being who goes, ugh, do I have to get in the car again?
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with my destination. I'm always happy to be here.
Right.
So it's just fighting that physical weariness.
Yeah.
You know.
And it's fighting Satan saying,
absolutely.
You don't have to go. It's just a man-made thing. You don't have to be there. God doesn't expect you to.
Yeah.
Okay. So we can point fingers all day long at Jeroboam and those northern kings who weren't any good. But we need to be saying, where do I make some of those same justifications in my life? And I shouldn't make them, and get them out of my life and serve God. So then you have the southern kingdom that they wind up falling later. They stay faithful longer. They had a few good judges. And they would, our judges, kings, they would get rid of some of the bad things, but they wouldn't take care of the high places. They wouldn't destroy all the high places. And you think, what are high places? Young people might not always remember this and stuff. But that was where they set up idol worship. And they didn't get rid of those high places. I know y'all have the supplement songbook. I don't know if y'all sing 150, I think it is. 145.
I don't remember.
It's called The Highest Place. It is a beautiful song talking about how God is our high place. I place you on the highest place, for you are the great high priest. I place you far above all else. And I come to you and worship at your feet. I bow down and worship at your feet. But it's a beautiful, beautiful song. And when the first time we ever sang it, I immediately thought back to these kings that they left the high places.
And the one who destroyed it, his son, immediately built it up again.
Yeah. If one of them would destroy it, the next generation would build it back up. Okay. But we don't have idol worship per se. We don't have a mountain that we go to and put all this stuff on. But what do I have in my high place?
Things.
Sometimes it's things. Sometimes it's status. Sometimes it's
entertainment. I think that hits a lot of people in our world today, because we are so comfortable with things. Most of us just have them. But you get a big football game going that interferes with services, and you lose the people, sadly.
But we have to remember, our high place needs to be God, Christ. That needs to come first. And then others, and then ourselves. So they wanted kings like everybody else. Kings caused them to lose their land. And then you have homesick heroes to encourage them while they're away from their land. Esther, Nehemiah, people like that. And then heroes to bring them home again. That's Ezra, Nehemiah, and Zerubbabel, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, when they're bringing them back to the land. And then all that's to wait on the special blessing, which is the one thing that hasn't been fulfilled yet. That's Christ at that time. Had not been fulfilled was Christ, God's great blessing. That was a blessing for everybody. And then as Christians, we build our lives on God's plan. Okay, now let's get them to fulfill this land promise. All right. They did a really good job of explaining some of this, so we're going to read some of it straight out of the book. So, Jean, if you'll do... That's fine. I'll read the first one, and then we'll start reading the different paragraphs. Joshua 12 is a summary of all the cities that Israel had conquered to this point. It includes all the territories on both sides of the Jordan, and there's still much land to be taken, but there was no strong king left. God told Joshua to go ahead and divide the land among the tribes, and that he would help each tribe finish the task of clearing the possession. Okay? All right. If you'll read the next paragraph. Do you feel like it?
Yes.
Okay?
Chapters 13 and 14 describe the border lines of the tribal territories in detail. It is easy to determine the general location of each tribe, but determining exact border lines is the hardest question of all Bible geography. Any two maps you look at will vary on the questions, unless they were drawn by the same individual. Some of the difficulty arises in understanding exactly what is meant by some of the Hebrew expressions used in the descriptions. Another problem is that some of the towns listed are called by names used at that time, though the name might be changed later. Many of the cities have not been located. Furthermore, they did not survey land carefully as we do today. Rather than sending surveyors throughout the land and dividing it into a precise number of acres for each tribe, the tribe asked for particular cities in particular sections of the country. Thus, there was overlapping of borders. Still another problem arose because they did not know how large the land was at first. Judah asked for his territory first and was granted too large a portion. Also in the north, the fertile land of Jezreel was the rich plum each tribe wanted. Therefore, the tribes of Issachar, Zebulun, Manasseh, and Asher all had some cities in the valley.
Okay, so Judah asks for a big portion, and they get this huge portion. But it wasn't all great land and stuff. But that plain of Jezreel, that was good land. That was real good land. That was where Gideon had his battle up in that area. But it was fertile. You talk about the Fertile Crescent that was over there between the Euphrates and the Tigris. This is kind of like the western Fertile Crescent. You wouldn't call it a crescent, but it was the fertile part of the land. I don't know about you. I'd rather have a little piece of fertile land that could sustain my family than a whole bunch of something that's not going to grow much on it, or hills and crevices and things that my sheep and stuff couldn't even safely live in. Okay. All right. Do you want to read the next paragraph for me?
The easiest way out of the dilemma of determining exact border lines is to place the name of the tribe in the approximate portion it received and leave the lines undrawn. In spite of the problems, however, we have chosen to draw lines over each portion so that it's easy to tell at a glance where each tribe lived. We have studied the passages carefully and have used the maps at our disposal to determine the most accurate divisions we can. Please feel free to study the passages yourself and come to your own conclusions. Remember, our faith does not rest on the exact location of this glory, but rather on the fact that God kept his promise to give this land to Abraham's descendants.
I love that. So many times we get caught up on the, oh, you got to agree with this exact little thing. That's wrong. On something like that, there's some things that matter. I'll go on record now. There are some things and many things that doctrinally matter. But geography, whether you draw it 15 miles to the south or something, it really, that doesn't affect our salvation.
Well, and the goal of studying the geography is to understand more clearly what went on. And you can understand if you're 15 miles north or south.
Right. And the big thing is to know that God kept his promise. He fulfilled that land promise. So let's look at that, the land promise, and how it's fulfilled. You've got the 12 sons, or sons of Jacob. You've got, and I'm going to say them in order of when they were born. You've got Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. Those were Leah's sons. And then remember, Rachel said, oh, you can have my handmaiden. Gad, or Rachel's, Dan, Naphtali. And then Leah said, oh, well, my handmaiden can have sons too. Gad and Asher. And then you go back to Issachar, Zebulun, and Joseph and Benjamin. And those are the sons of Jacob. Okay? All right. So that's where we get all the names. And Joshua 12 is the summary. That's what we talked about. It includes territories on both sides of the Jordan. And Joshua's told to divide the land, and God's going to help them finish the task of clearing it of all of its inhabitants. And then chapters 13 through 19 describes the border lines. Okay, and you can determine the general location, but it's very difficult to determine the exact location. And that's okay. All right. Tribes asked for specific cities that were in particular sections of the country. And our faith rests on the fact that God kept his promise. So let's look at these different places real quick. And this is where the map on the screen comes in handy. Put this there so I don't have to go back and find that page. All right. The Dead Sea. We all know where the Dead Sea is. It's down at the southern portion. And let's see. Right there. Okay. The Mediterranean Sea is called the Great Sea. It's out there west of this land of Canaan. And then the Sea of Kinnereth. And you say it with a K, like the word Christ, Kinnereth. And it's also known as several other names. Sea of Galilee or the Sea of Gennesaret. Okay? And Tiberia, something, Sea of Tiberia usually too. But it's up, it's the larger sea that's north of the Dead Sea. Then there's a smaller sea, like, we talked about it the other day, Hula or something like that. All right, the Jordan River is the river that connects the Sea of Galilee down to the Dead Sea, but it also goes further up north above the other seas up to Mount Hebron. Yes. All right. Now you get to the four rivers on the eastern side of the Jordan. And I don't know if y'all remember how I remember it, as I say, why Jazz? Like, why, but with a Y, Jazz. And the one with the Y is on top, and then J-A-Z. So, the Zered River is the one at the farthest to the bottom. The Arnon River is the one a little bit north of there that's going to go between Moab and where Reuben's territory. The Jabbok River is the one straight east of the Jordan River, of the main part of the Jordan River. And then the Yarmouk River is the one farthest to the north, just on the southern edge of the Sea of Galilee, or Sea of Kinnereth. Okay? Then you have the different areas of the tribe. Reuben asked for the tribe over by Moab. Gad got the middle section. And then half the tribe of Manasseh got some on the eastern side. They also got some on the western side in that area of the Jezreel plain. Some of the good land. Okay. Simeon is down here. He got the task of sharing Judah's two big portion. Judah is that other section. Now, is it completely divided? Do we know a dividing line? No, we don't.
But you know when Jacob gave the blessings before he died, told Simeon this would happen, that he's going to kill Absalom.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, yeah, for mentioning that. That another kind of fulfillment of something that is told. Benjamin is just to the west of the Jordan River, just to the north of the Dead Sea. Ephraim is right there. Dan is between the Mediterranean Sea and Ephraim's area. Issachar is further north. Zebulun is a little further north, kind of right in the center part up there. Asher is along the coastline on the northern side of Canaan. And Naphtali is the inside portion over there between the Sea of Galilee and the other lake that's up there, okay? All right. The tribal territories. Okay. Reuben, Gad, and Asher had asked for their land ahead of time. Okay? So,
Asher.
Oh, did I say Asher? I did. Manasseh. Sorry. Thank you for catching that. Half of the tribe of Manasseh. Okay? All right. Giselle, would you read the paragraph just below all the names on the map?
The tribes of Reuben, Gad, and half of the tribe of Manasseh asked for the territory east of the Jordan before Moses died. At first, Moses was distressed because he thought they were afraid to take the land of Canaan. The soldiers assured him that they would help their brethren conquer all of Canaan before returning to their own inheritance. Reuben was given the southern portion nearest the territory of Moab, from the Arnon River to about even with the northern tip of the Dead Sea. Gad was given the next section, approximately the northern half of the territory taken from King Sihon. Manasseh received some land south of the Yarmouk River and all the territory of Bashan, which he had taken from King Og.
Okay. All right. Do you feel like you know? Can you read the next paragraph?
Okay, I don't have the mic.
Okay. Judah.
Okay. Judah was the first tribe to pass the territory which the Lord had given. All the land from a line approximately even with the northern end of the Dead Sea, across to the Great Sea and south to Negev. The city of
Hebron.
What?
Hebron.
Hebron was given specifically to Caleb in return for his faithfulness many years earlier when he was one of the few faithful spies at Kadesh Barnea.
Okay. So, really quickly, Reuben, Gad, and half of Manasseh had gotten sections of land on the eastern side of the Jordan River, and Moses is the one that had given that to them. And he was afraid, he thought that they were afraid to go in and fight the battles, and they assured him, no, that they would help the brothers drive out the inhabitants of the land. And so it tells where they were given. Reuben's down in the south part, north of the Arnon River, and on the eastern side of the Dead Sea. Gad got the land that was taken from Sihon, and Manasseh got the land taken from King Og. Okay. Judah's the first one that asked for the territory west of the Jordan, and he's given all the land west of the Dead Sea, south to the Negev, except for the city of Hebron that was given to Caleb for his faithfulness. Okay, why was he given so much land? They didn't have a map that said, okay, I want this section, I want this section. And they didn't go out and survey all the land. And so when he asked, well, sure, you know, this is what he wants, so cut the line off here and you get everything south of here. Not realizing that that was over half of the land mass, when you look at it, you know, that's a lot of land that he got. And so the others are going to complain about that. Okay? All right. Let's see.
And also,
and what time is it?
About 10 till.
10 till? Okay. That's fine. Yes, thanks.
Wasn't Judah the one? No, that was you. I was thinking that he was the one who said, don't kill him.
Oh. Or something. Okay. All right. Okay. Let's see. Can you read the next paragraph?
Ephraim and the remaining half of the tribe of Manasseh asked for the central portion of land. Their two portions reached from Bethel in the south to the plain of Jezreel in the north. Ephraim's cities were in the southern portion of their allotment, Manasseh's in the north.
Okay. And I'm going to go ahead and read the big paragraph really quickly because I want to make sure that it's loud enough for it to be on the tape and stuff. But determining the exact border between Ephraim and Manasseh is one of the disputed questions from this period. We are not taking time to discuss all such questions, but let's take this one as an example. Joshua 16:5-8 describes the borders of Ephraim. And when you read through there, the last part of it says the eastern border is described as curving eastward unto, and here I don't know if I wrote it down good, Taanath, can't read my own writing, Shiloh, and pass by it on the east to Jeremoth, and it went down from Jamoth to... Let me have it filled in. Let me see if it's on here.
Dude, but nothing sounds like what you said. I couldn't understand all that. It's confusing
okay.
to me.
Let's see if it has it on here. Here, I was going to read it really well for y'all. And I wrote it when, I guess, my eyes were half closed or something. Adaroth and to Naroth and came to Jericho and went out at the Jordan. Okay. I butchered those names. Sorry about that. That's in chapter 16, 6 and 7. It says, note that the location of these cities, this is the important part, because you can go back and look at the actual wording and stuff. Note that the location of these cities on your map. Do you see that Adaroth and Naroth are still a little distance between 2.5 and 5 miles of the Jordan? So who owned the river valley there? So basically, it comes down and this last little piece of it comes down like that. And then it says it exits at the Jordan. So who owned that little section that was between those couple of cities and the Jordan? Who owned that little section of land? It said, if Ephraim's territory ended with Adaroth and Naharath, then perhaps Manasseh's territory dipped down to control that land. The river valley to Jericho. Some maps are drawn thus. And at first thought, we would assume that the river valley was a prize that each would want. But this is one more example of how a look at geographic features help us understand a passage. The hill country that was east of Bethel drops off very rapidly toward the river. Therefore, there were very deep or steep, ragged bluffs east of Adaroth and Jaarath. They were the last; those two places were the last villages on the edge of the bluffs, and were listed as the boundary cities. So, remember our description of the Jordan River. At lesson 4, we noted that the river could not be used for either navigation or irrigation. There was a fording point, that's a crossing point, at Adam in Manasseh's territory, and another at Jericho on Ephraim's southern border. But the river banks between these points were a barrier rather than a help. So in practical terms, neither Ephraim nor Manasseh wanted that section of land. That little section of land, it's kind of hard for me to do it. You know, if the Jordan River's right here, and then somewhere 2.5 miles to 5 miles, here's a little city here, and here's a little city or village here. But this land right between them and the Jordan River, you couldn't walk across it. It was steep, jagged areas. You couldn't irrigate from the river there. You couldn't cross the river there. You couldn't do anything. You couldn't get to the river without much difficulty. It would be very dangerous to go through there. You would be much better off and quicker. It's kind of like the GPS and stuff. Sometimes the shortest distance is not the way you want to go. That, you know, I think, how many of y'all have traveled up in the mountains in Colorado or in Tennessee even? And, you know, from point A to point B, as the crow flies, you could get there. It doesn't look like very long at all. Oh, we could make it in about 10 or 15 minutes. But no, you got to go down this mountain, down over here, and up that mountain. Or even if it's on the other side of the mountain, you might have to still go down this side and then around it and up that side, because the way across it was too treacherous and you couldn't drive a vehicle. Well, they would have the same situations. They didn't have vehicles, but there was just some areas it was just too steep. It would be much safer for them to go around. So this was a section of land that wasn't useful for anything. So I could understand that that for them to say, okay, well, this is the boundary. You go to this little section and then down from there and then out to the Jordan. But if you say, well, okay, well, then that person up north must own this land, then it makes it look like, well, that was a great section of land if they wanted that little section down there. Well, no, it really kind of seems like geographically that it wouldn't be valuable for anything, and it might be more of a hindrance for it to be included in their land. So it really doesn't matter who gets the land and stuff. It's not a section of land that's usable. Okay? For our purposes, they included it, the bluffs in the Jordan in Ephraim's territory, so it wouldn't seem like, and I'm not reading it verbatim, but it wouldn't seem like that the northern territory just wanted that land, that it was just like a jewel piece of land that, you know, sometimes we carve out land and here's this blank, this thing, and all of a sudden it dips down because you wanted that little section of land because it was really good. It had maybe a prize in it, like the pearl of great price or something. Okay? All right, Faith, I'll let you read the next couple of paragraphs.
The other tribes were slow about asking for territory. Joshua chided them and urged them to send men to explore the remaining land and divide it into seven portions. But then lots were cast to see which portion would fall to each remaining tribe. The men reported Judah's portion was two waters and it fell side by side to share the territory. Most of the cities listed for Simeon in the southern part of Judah's land, but do not make a dividing line between Judah and Simeon on the mountain.
Okay, I'll let you read one more.
The tribes of Dan and Benjamin were given territory between the tribes of Ephraim and Judah. Asher was given the narrow coastal plain of the north. Naphtali received the lot lying farthest north along the banks of the upper Jordan. Zebulun and Issachar each received a healthy portion of the Jezreel plain and of the hills and valleys of the lower Galilee.
Okay. Sister Foster, would you read the next one?
Notice Levi is not shown as having a specific territory in the map. God selected that tribe to be his special ministers in the tabernacle of worship. The priests were Levites in the specific family of Aaron. The other Levites helped in other aspects of the tabernacle work. One of their duties was to teach the law to all the people. After each tribe was given its portion, they were instructed to give cities out of their borders to the Levite. There were even 48 cities scattered throughout the land. Six of these 48 were designated as cities of refuge, where one might flee in case of an accidental killing. These cities were located as to be within a city a day's journey from any portion in the land.
Okay, so why was it important for the Levites to have cities scattered throughout?
Cities of refuge.
Well, cities of refuge. They were the priestly tribe, and they were to instruct on the law. So if you had them all located down in one area, well, what about all those other tribes? Would they be taught the law? Were they still expected to abide by the law? So you had to have like little satellite areas for them to be able to learn the law and to have access to the priests. And then the cities of refuge were very important. It said it was within a day's journey of any point in the land. Why was that important?
Well, it was refuge from revenge.
Refuge from revenge. Okay. So if you've accidentally killed someone and you're fleeing for your life because this person's family is coming after you, the longer you have to go to get to a city of refuge, the more likely revenge is going to happen and you are going to meet your fate without any kind of judgment from someone that's looking at it from an outside view. Okay, so they wanted it to be close enough to where anywhere you lived, you could get to one of those cities in a hurry. Okay, all right. So Do we have time to do the last couple of paragraphs?
Sure.
Okay. All right. Rita, you want to do the next one?
If we count the special tribe of Levi, there are a total of 13 tribes. How did that happen? Jacob had only 12 sons. Turn back to Genesis 48 for the answer. Jacob's oldest son, Reuben, sinned, and Jacob chose to give the birthright to Joseph, the oldest son of his favorite wife, Rachel. Therefore, instead of naming Joseph as one of the tribes, his two sons each inherited equally with the sons of Jacob, Joseph's double portion.
Okay. And why didn't Joseph get it?
He's
dead. Yeah, yeah. And that's a simple question, but when you're reading through here, you go, well, why'd they give it to his kids? Well, he was dead. So it went past to whose two children? Okay, so I'm glad you laughed when you said that, because it's a silly question, but sometimes you have to go, wait, don't forget he's dead. It went to his children. Okay, so it says, study the map carefully. This is the land that as God intended it to be. There were still Canaanites living within each nation's tribe, or each nation's tribe's land, but God had already promised to help his people finish driving them out. Joshua called the people together before he died and urged them to be faithful. He affirmed that God had given them all the land he had promised. And because this is what it says in chapter 21, verses 13 through 15. And the Lord gave unto Israel all the land which he swore to give unto their fathers, and they possessed it and dwelt therein. There failed not aught of any good thing of which the Lord had spoken to the house of Israel. It all came to pass.
And Mom?
Yes.
It's actually chapter 21, verses
43 through 45. Okay, yes, my eyes are... That print was too small for me to read. 43 through 45. Okay, two of the promises to Abraham are fulfilled by the end of the book of Joshua. His descendants are a distinct, separate nation and a large one. A very, very, very large one. Remember when they came out of Egypt. I keep mentioning this over and over again. There were 603,550 men that were 20 years and up. That puts it into the 1 to 2 million people. Easy. And now they're bigger. The Jews do not need to inherit the land today to fulfill the promise to Abraham. But what do you hear all the time? Oh, got to get that land back to those Israelites. God promised the land to them. And I'm not saying that we don't support them as a
people.
I don't want somebody bombing them just because for the sake of some religious war. Or if they haven't done something wrong, they don't need to be punished for it. But they're not in line to go get that land.
Just the other day we were talking to someone and they said, well, we have to support Israel, they're God's people. And Roger just said, used to be.
Yes. They did. They used to be God's people. And so we're not waiting for that promise. That promise was made and kept well over 1,000 years before Christ was born. It's done. It's over. History shows that they possessed the land. And the only promise to Abraham that's not fulfilled by this point in the history was the one concerning the one who would come to bless all nations. God still had many lessons for his mankind to learn before the time would be right for sending his son. Okay. All right. So next week we'll kind of review it all. And if we get really adventurous, we might kind of delve into the next one too, but other than that, we'll do a review next week and